You're listening to the Barcode Podcast with your host, Chris Glandon, serving cybersecurity straight up with no chaser. Let's hit the bar and grab a drink.
Hey, Tony.
Hey, Chris, what's going on?
Not much. Hey, you're here late tonight.
Yeah, you know my motto. I must CID, continually integrate and deliver. Awesome drinks, that is.
So what's brewing in the liquor lab tonight?
Well, this was kind of scientific. We're calling it radioactive. Stay back, bro. We're going to integrate 2 ounces coconut rum, 3 ounces pineapple juice, 2 ounces melon liqueur. In a shaker glass with ice, combine coconut rum, melon liqueur, pineapple juice, shake it. Strain it, highball glass over ice. I'll pop the collar on the lab coat with that one.
That's a killer formula. Thanks, bro. Hey, on that note, I gotta check in with my man, a DevOps OG.
Get it in, son. See you next round.
So today at the bar, we are talking security and DevSecOps. With me, Jim Manico, founder of Manico Security, where he trains software developers on secure coding and security engineering. Jim, thanks so much for having a drink with me today.
Chris, it's my pleasure. My drink of choice today is water.
Oh, man.
First of all, water is a great beverage. I'm not a big alcohol drinker. My body just doesn't digest it well. I was in Germany, and there, I'm going to on a big tour of all these German OWASP chapters, and I found out mid-trip, it's okay to drink non-alcoholic beer. So you could still be at the bar, I would hope, without drinking.
Absolutely. Alcohol. Absolutely. We serve water here too. So just let me know if you need anything. So Jim, before we dive in, you know, beyond my one-liner introduction there, can you tell us a little bit about what you do and just a bit about the journey that got you here?
Certainly. I mean, I lived on Kauai for the last 20 years, and there was a job offer looking for a programmer. I interviewed with Stephen Northcutt, and he lured me into the worlds of the SANS Institute and security back, I believe, you know, close to like 17 or 18 years ago now. And I've been a member of the security community ever since. I taught for SANS. I've been a software developer for a long time. I'm getting old, so I've been writing code for well over like 25 years or so at this point. Oh, wow. And I've been studying security engineering for the last 18 years. About 10 years ago, I fully switched focus from development to being a security educator. And I've been teaching security classes, first for SANS, then for White Hat Security, where I was a VP a few years ago. And then I found, when I left White Hat Security, I founded my own firm. I'm the founder of Manicode Security. Like, my name is Jim Manico, and my company's name, Manicode.
And love it.
We're a real straightforward company. We focus on teaching developers about how to write secure software. And when I started the company, many of my friends were like, is that going to be enough to keep you busy? I'm book solid. This is a, you know, this what I do, teaching developers about secure software, is rising in importance. It's the instructor-led training industry of technical education. And I'm really busy, and I have 5 other instructors who teach with me and for me for Manicode in some way.
So that's awesome. Teaching. Yeah, definitely. It's definitely needed for sure. And you've been coding for so long that you actually got to see the evolution from, I guess, AppSec to DevSecOps, right? And that terminology really start getting used. So,
well, first of all, we were doing DevOps 20 years ago. It's a term that's a new term, but using automation to build, deploy, and do testing has been around for decades. DevOps and DevSecOps is just formalizing that part of what good developers did already, because we don't want to have a manual set of steps to deploy code. We automate that with scripting. And again, we were doing that 20 years ago. I think where DevSecOps and DevOps is a reasonable term, and as we really do shift gears to that being a formal part of software development, is because the tooling available to build a DevOps pipeline has gotten a lot more mature. Like, Jenkins is one of the early ones, and I see a lot of people rolling away from that using things like GitHub Actions. And GitHub has so many integrated security tooling. Rather than me writing my custom scripts, do automation and to like wire these different security tools in, I go to GitHub, build actions, Dependabot, turn it on, blah, blah, blah. And I could really get, especially with certain providers, I can get a reasonable DevOps pipeline done pretty easily. Mm. And here, I'll give you one more. Where DevOps, I think, has also changed a lot is the main decision point in a DevOps pipeline is when you're checking in code. And when we did developer automation, I was never prevented from checking in code. I may have to unwind things and fix things if I made mistakes, but a real mature pipeline, when I'm trying to check in code with an obvious security vulnerability, with an obvious third-party library that's out of date from a security point of view, I should be blocked from checking that code in. And that blocking step, augmented with all the new automation available out of the box, really helps take DevOps from a 20-year-old idea that we have been doing to a much more modern process that all developers should be doing in some way.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a household name, if you will, now. You hear it all the time. And I'm glad to hear that the tooling is being built up for it, where before I'm sure it was a lot of legwork for you. From my perspective, at the core, I see DevSecOps as, I break it down into developer security and operation. And it's about bringing that security to the SDLC pipeline to identify vulnerabilities, I guess, as early on in the development process as you properly can. Would you mind expanding a little bit just on that definition and maybe provide an ideal definition for you? If this was done properly, how would that look?
I'm a bit of a DevOps naysayer because I don't like all the emphasis put on it, because I think it's a real basic thing. And so for me, DevOps and DevSecOps is a really overloaded, abused term that's losing its meaning. So to me, all that DevOps is when I'm trying to check in code, right? Yeah. Make sure that you're running static analysis that runs in like 60 seconds, that you're running dynamic analysis that runs in 60 seconds or runs at night, preferably. And it's kind of hard to do dynamic testing in the middle of a check-in. So I usually take dynamic testing, because it takes hours to run well. And I'll do that at night as part of my back-end processes rather than during check-in time. So at check-in time, I want to see two big things: static analysis, and I want to see SCA, software composition analysis, to check my third-party libraries, and when necessary, custom unit tests that my security engineers and or developers are building. And these security tests should block my ability to check in code. And the other part of DevOps is chat operations. If someone is going to check in authentication code, that might be delayed, and using Slack integration and similar, I can communicate that somebody is trying to check in authentication code. It requires review before this goes live manually for sensitive code. DevOps also means to me that you're wiring in production deployment with additional integration testing when you go live. And so, again, for me, DevOps is about stopping the developer from checking in insecurity through an advanced pipeline that quickly gives them security information when they're trying to check in insecure code. Again, if I have to wait 20 minutes for a security test, you're not really doing DevOps at check-in time. And here's the thing. All the major the software composition analysis tools of the day, the ones that check on your third-party libraries for security, they all run fast and are trivial to wire into a pipeline, in my opinion. But the static analysis tools, they don't run fast. They don't run fast at all. This is why I'm such a big fan of an emerging static analysis company that develops SemGrep. SemGrep is a lot of super fast rules. It is not head-to-head as deep as other commercial products, but a lot of the commercial products take hours to run, and that's the death to DevOps. So what I like to do is when a developer is trying to check in code, I'm going to run SemGrep or another commercial tool that runs fast with most of the rules stripped out. I'm going to run software composition analysis and then run these same tools in their deeper mode at night in an offline cycle. So for me, it's all about, again, quickly giving information to the developer about security mistakes to stop them from checking in code. There are other pieces to DevOps that are important, but that's the one I care most about in my work.
Gotcha. So then let me ask you about the security with those tools. What's your take on those code repositories and the protection mechanisms involved with committing code?
All source code repositories, they have strong security. But let's talk about GitHub, for example. I was just configuring my account earlier today. You can do it. Depends on how an individual customer of GitHub decides to configure their particular repository. It could be username, password only. You could allow anonymous check-ins. You could allow your company check-ins only, and you can have password, multi-factor of several different flavors, or even SSH type keys where each developer has to have an individual key deployed. It depends on how you configure this. I work for some companies where they force me to use a key, and I'm glad they do that. Others only want me to use multi-factor. Some will say multi-factor, but no SMS is allowed, which is pretty wise, actually. Some have no policies. So it just depends on how you configure your source code repository, Jenkins, and other components within your DevOps pipeline. But the point is, I'm trying to make is, you can't just buy a DevOps and use it. DevOps pipelines require extensive management and configuration. It's non-trivial. It's way more difficult to set that up than other things. So go ahead and do DevOps. I think it's a big deal, but you need to allocate resources to manage this sensibly. And you got to keep it up to date and update the components and manage that infrastructure well. You don't just buy a DevOps and say, here, developers, you got to use this. No, it requires extensive administration.
Gotcha. So forgive me here. I don't typically like to drop four-letter words on my podcast, but DAST, SAST, RASP, IAST. Yeah. Can you help me understand those terms and how it fits into DevSecOps?
SAST is static analysis security testing. This is when I can run it. It's usually source code analysis. So SAST, S-A-S-T. It's static analysis.
Software testing.
Security testing, yes. And what that's all about is a tool that can run against code. I don't need a running application. I just need to have access to that source code repository or just raw strings of, raw text of static code, and I can run a test against it. Traditionally, these tools take a long time to run because they're building building a model of your entire code base, and that's super expensive. There's new generation of static analysis tools coming out that will work better in the pipeline. And here's what I ask all of you trying to buy static analysis to go with the pipeline. Make sure it can hit your code base and scan it within a minute or two, or your developers are going to revolt, because we want to have check-in time static analysis. It's got to run fast. I encourage you all to look at SemGrep, because it's built from the ground up for speed, even though it's lower fidelity. So I like using SemGrep at check-in time, and maybe another product for my evening scan, which will take hours to run on a big code base. So that's SAST. Static analysis, software testing, security testing. So I'm close. And that runs against the code. It's great for DevOps. The second one is SCA, software composition analysis, right? Software composition analysis it's about looking at the third-party libraries you're using, looking those up against common databases like the NVD vulnerability database or the CWE or CVE database and other databases. And it's all about looking to see if the third-party libraries you're using have security problems in them. And we're not like looking at the code, we're looking at vulnerability database. So it's a little less accurate than looking at the code. But this is fundamental. There's free tools like the OWASP dependency check product. There's free tools like NPM audit and a host of other framework specific tools. There's commercial vendors like SNCC and WhiteSource and JFrog. And I admit, I do like SNCC. They got really good. I used to talk smack about SNCC. Or SNCC, S-N-Y-K, whatever their name, SNCC. I used to talk smack about them, but a couple incidents have happened recently where SNCC's database covered it immediately and other databases took like 30 days to cover it. So I do like the idea of using a commercial vendor. I think in the future, we're not going to need a commercial vendor as open source tooling gets better, but I would consider purchasing SCA, Sneak and others. It's going to check your project for third-party library vulnerabilities, and it runs fast. It runs within a check-in period and fits into a pipeline really well, and I heavily encourage you to use it. Now, the other ones, DAST, Dynamic Application Security Testing. In my experience, all the DAST products take a long time to run because they're sending manual requests to a live-running application checking for vulnerabilities. So I don't like running DAST in a pipeline. And I hope you DAST developers jump in and correct me on this, but I haven't seen it work well. So I don't use DAST in a pipeline. I use DAST as part of my pipeline's background scan that happens in the evening and takes hours to run. And that's dandy, right? That's what it still makes it valuable. Let's run it once a night and consume those results and triage them in the morning before we begin our work for the day. So that's DAST, because it's a scanner that's literally sending attack payloads up to your application that's running. And also DAST can cause harm to a production application. So you have to use production safe payloads if you're running your DAST against a production app. So DAST, it takes more work to configure and run effectively. But that's, again, sending attack payloads to your app to look for vulnerabilities. The last one is RASP or IAST. And I'm not a fan of these categories. And it's not, and I have a bone to pick with some of the companies in this area, but let's be realistic. When I'm using DAST, I have to usually plug this into the software in a very deep way, right? And I have to usually like open up the Java profiling API or something, which really adds weakness. So I wouldn't do this in production, no way. And even in testing, these are very invasive tools and I have to install them into my software runtime environment and then run and then actually manually traverse all the features of the app manually and similar. And these tools are unreasonably expensive, right? Some of the main vendors, there's only a few vendors here. You know what I'm talking about. The cost of the main RASP and IAST vendor is way too much for the, and what they basically do is they're really good at finding injection. One of the better tools, one of the best tools for finding injection, but that's it. And I have to spend like my entire security budget to find injection. These are not reasonable tools. I would not be buying them. And I pretty much dismiss the category until I see a more cost-effective vendor or I see better results. And I have plenty of customers who use that, who've bet their whole budget to use it. Then we run it head-to-head against another tool and they find tons of other things that the RASP and IAST vendor is not finding. And yet their whole budget's built on this really good injection discovery tool. I'm not a fan, so I dismiss that category. I want to see SAST is a must-have that runs at pipeline speed. DAST is great to run at night in full bore mode. SCA, I run it every check-in. And then even SAST, I'll use one of the more the deeper vendors to run it at night in full mode for several hours. And now I want to train my developers to do good security unit testing for business logic, access control, and other areas where tools don't do so great. Was that a good answer to your question?
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for that rundown and the prioritization. That's incredibly valuable. From your perspective, when we look at security teams and development teams, what have you seen work in terms of those two teams working closer together to enhance cybersecurity for an organization?
The Automotive Linux Group cited that the only way, and it's not debatable, unless you have a really deep application security expert embedded with your developer team, you're not going to get good AppSec. So that's the only thing I endorse. The more you separate teams or you have security experts who don't understand development, I mean, this stuff has proven not to work. So the problem is simple. You either embed an AppSec person to be an integrated member of your development team. And if you don't have that, then find your most security-aware developer and convert them to a security champion, right? Convert them Absolutely. To a security champion so they can be a liaison between security and development. But to expect development to like approach security is not going to work. But to have like a security resource embedded with developers, you have an administrative team that is managing the pipeline, embedded with the development team, that works. A lot of companies, they want developers to make a shift in another direction. They're busy trying to get functionality to work. So the way this works is it's, first of all, application security is about enabling developers to write secure code. End of story. That's it. Everything else is secondary. And a lot of it's BS, to be honest with you. So if you're not actively enabling developers to write secure code, I don't think you're really doing application security. You're doing something else. So let's build a, let's have staff building a pipeline and working with developers every day to tune it, to make sure it's effective for what developers are doing. And let's take a subject matter expert or a security champion and embed them with your developer teams, so developers on a day in and day out basis have guidance. On another note, have your architects and lead developers build reusable security tools or build best practices around standard frameworks, so no one has to get guess on these things. And now you're doing application security, in my opinion.
100%. I agree with that approach completely. And that's part of what Manicode is doing now, right? Developing developers to have a security mindset.
Yeah, we my firm does instructor-led training, and we teach developers, you know, specific to Java, .NET, other languages. We have a Kubernetes instructor. We have a mobile instructor from Singapore, where mobile security is really the height of the whole culture at this point. And yeah.
Awesome. So when you look at the DevSecOps process, what have you found most organizations often get wrong?
Building a pipeline with building a security pipeline with a separate team without getting developers' advice and feedback, and then telling the whole company, you have to use this pipeline now. That's nonsense. And this really common nonsense, unfortunately, because they want to buy a DevOps. They want to build a DevOps and then force folks to use it. DevOps is really about building that pipeline with developers so they can have a say in how it's working or not. Or how about this? I saw someone roll out a pipeline that was using all these tools, and every check-in took like an hour. That's nonsense. So that's the second anti-pattern, is having your check-in security tests running for longer than 2 minutes. That's kind of, that's approximately my metric. If when it starts at five to wait 5-10 minutes for a check-in, because you're doing all your real slow security scanning, things start to slow and things start to break down real fast in development. Those are the two anti-patterns I'm worried about in the DevOps world.
I've noticed cloud native technologies like containers and microservices. Now you're starting to see those appear more, I guess, and become a major component of DevSecOps initiatives. How has the DevSecOps workflow adapted to incorporate these aspects?
Microservices and similar is just another engineering paradigm. So I think other people, I would ask that question more towards the other cloud developer experts, some of the Kubernetes experts. That's not my top expertise. I have other instructors for that. So There are good answers to that, because when you're building Kubernetes native applications, you want to have really small microservices per pod so they can auto scale differently and similar. And I don't have the greatest experience in those ideas. So I would talk to like Jimmy Mesta. I would talk to Abe, who's like the lead guy in the world on Kubernetes. Okay. I would talk to like Ian, I forgot her name, but Ian Goldsmith. I forgot her name offhand. Forgive me, Ian. But there, I would lean towards the Kubernetes world to look at how DevOps type development integrates with modern cloud stacks the best. That's the direction. That's who I would go talk to. And I'm still upset that I got Ian's name wrong, because she's one of my favorite Twitter personalities, and she's one of the top people in the world at Kubernetes. So I'm going to see if I, Ian, where are you? I'm going to see if I can find her.
So yeah, I just want to quickly talk about Manicode security real quick. And you focus, like I mentioned earlier, on training developers, secure coding methods. If you could just take a moment, talk to me about that and your mission there.
Sure. I mean, you just find me at manicode.com, manicode.com. Take a look at my catalog. I have there's my email address. is right there on the website. And drop, if you're interested in getting your developers trained in application security, drop me a line. And look, I like business and I have a lot of it. And if when I talk to people and I know that my firm is not correct for their training needs, I recommend other companies that I know take this seriously. So I try to be objective. And if I don't have that specific instructor available, either go find them or make another recommendation of who is good. I'm blessed enough where I got a lot of work and my firm is doing really well for the size of my company. So I'll try to be objective. So again, I'm jim@manico.com. You can see me online. Hit me up with email. I'll be glad to answer your questions about developer training.
Awesome. And I also read that you're an advisor to several organizations, including Nucleus, which we had on the show a few weeks back. Oh. They're doing some awesome things over there. So what's that experience been like? And what are you expecting from them in the year to come?
Well, I think Nucleus is important because as part of all this DevOps security testing, there is a lot of reports on vulnerabilities found. And what are you going to do with that? If you're trying to manage a suite of applications, I really think it's important to collect that data and put it in a content management system so you can track your vulnerability count per application over time. And there's a lot of software that does this, right? And there's competitors to Nucleus, but why I was like so zoned in on Nucleus is because they have integrations with 50 plus different security projects. And that's the hallmark of their tool is they'll take scanning data from any tool out there, integrate it into Nucleus and give you a real nice user interface to track how your business is doing. And after I saw how good they were, they invited me to be an advisor and an investor. And it's not just about making money for me. It's about supporting companies in the AppSec world that do good work, that are good people. And like, I'm a little bit of a wild man, you know, and that really works in class. Got to have a little personality. You got to have a little, got to do a dance and have good knowledge. And so what I like about Nucleus is they are really centered, well-managed and like just good people who have their head on straight and like have their mission of their company, which I think is really sensible. And so that's why I like them so much. There's a lot of folks who want to jump in, get a company, make a lot of money, get out. Now they're focusing on like good product delivery and they're all mentally healthy people in an era where that's not so common. I'm a big fan of the people and their technology. And I'm super honored to be one of their board members.
Agreed. Yeah. I'm glad to hear that. You know, they have an awesome vision over there. So shout out to those guys. So for those interested in DevSecOps, where do you go to get resources on how to be a secure developer?
OWASP. OWASP is the Open Web Application Security Product. Let me try that again. Open Web Application Security Project. It's a 501c3 charity in the US. It's a registered charity in Europe. Andrew Vanderstock is our executive director, and he's really overhauled the organization to address the needs of our members and to professionalize it in ways. So I am super jazzed about OWASP. I ask you to look at two projects, the OWASP ASVS standard, Application Security Verification Standard, a list of approximately 300 requirements to help developers do secure development. Go read that document. It's immensely valuable. I would also like you to look at the OWASP cheat sheet series. This is like a living encyclopedia on secure coding knowledge. There's my last note of where do you go to get resources on how to be a secure developer? I would look at those two projects, OWASP ASVS standard or the OWASP cheat sheet series. A quick search and you'll find them both.
Awesome. And I'll get those links on our website as well, so people can easily point click and check it out. Hypothetically, if you're building a bar, how do you build out the security? So, and I'm thinking in terms of, okay, you got physical security, you got your bouncers, your security cameras, right? You have data security, secure Wi-Fi. What else do you implement in a bar to help secure its patrons and its data?
I am not a drinker. I do not do well with alcohol.
Coffee bar.
A coffee bar. Okay, I'm better with a coffee bar. I want to get a really good on-premise payment system that doesn't store credit cards. I think that's the most important thing is I want to consume the credit card from a customer. I want to send it to a gateway and not persist it in any way. And there's plenty of on-premise payment systems that allow that. And that's the most important, because I know some coffee shops, they'll use some like old school garbage. Don't do that. Get like a real modern, even something like, I like Stripe and similar. These are not super expensive and you can operate your whole small coffee shop off a cell phone with a very inexpensively, and you're never saving a customer's credit card or other PII. That's my main advice for the coffee bar of my dreams.
Now, if you decide to build out that coffee bar, let's just say it's a cybersecurity themed coffee bar.
All right, I'm with you.
What would the name be? And what would your signature drink be called?
Okay, the name would be the Black Gold Cyber Cafe. There we go.
Okay. I like that.
And the main drink is going to be I'll call it Java Juice, which is really like two shots of espresso and a couple cubes of ice. You could get that down fast.
I like it. You got to take it down quick, though.
Yeah, the whole point is like you got code to do. You can't be like sipping an espresso hot. Oh, it's so hot. It's so hot. You don't want milk in it. You need caffeine. So two shots of espresso, two cubes of ice. It's Java Juice to get you. It's juice, right? It's get juiced up. That's the quickest way to like coding level caffeine.
I love it, man. I love it. Well, Jim, thanks for joining me today. You know, I learned a lot myself about the DevSecOps process. I'll make sure I point users out to your website to check it out. OWASP, we'll get everything listed there. So again, thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure, Chris.
Barcode patrons, if you enjoyed this episode and want an easy way to support the podcast, please leave me a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. If you're not on a Mac or iPhone, just visit thebarcodepodcast.com/reviews. I appreciate all the support. Cheers.
Unfortunately, it's time to shut the bar down for this episode. Thanks for stopping in. See you next time. We'll save you a seat. Be sure to check us out at thebarcodepodcast.com.